us more.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Cultivate Podcast. I am so glad to be back with you, and not just back to the podcast, but back to the United States. I just got back from being in the Amazon jungle for Justice and Mercy International's annual Jungle Pastors Conference, where we had 115 men and women that were there at this conference, and it was so incredible. And so I want to share some lessons I learned from the jungle, because so much of what I learned from these amazing people, these amazing servants of the Lord, is so relevant to our lives here. It's funny because in the Amazon, I am in the literal jungle. But when I get back to America, I realize we have a jungle of our own, and we are dealing with maybe not animal creatures as much as we are dealing with other things. And I have to tell you, before we get into things today, by the way, we are going to be in Scripture. We're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 today, as I kind of share some of these stories. But I have to tell you, speaking of animal creatures, we were sitting on the veranda of our center. Justice Mercy International has a kind of a retreat center about an hour and a half outside of the city of Manaus, which is the capital city of the state of Amazonas. And the center sits right on the Amazon River. So we are literally in the jungle. We started this pastor's conference back in 2011. My dad really kind of kicked it off, and I was there with him for the very first one. And it's grown into this incredible thing where we are able to bring in men and women from deep into the jungle. Some of them we have to fly in because they're so far away. Some are on boats for days at a time to get there. And we spend several days with them doing Bible training, worship. We have really wonderful meals that we get to serve them. And it's just a respite time for them. But then, of course, we end up being taught so much about what it means to live for the ultimate prize of knowing Jesus Christ. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But anyway, back to the animals. So we're sitting out on the veranda, and it's probably 10 o'clock at night, and there's maybe 20 Brazilians and 15 Americans or so. And that's part of our team. And we're just debriefing the day, just the staff debriefing the day. And we were talking about the following day how our jungle guide, Milton, was going to take some of the Americans out on like a jungle excursion. And Milton is a certified Amazon jungle guide, born and raised in the Amazon. So there's really no creature he hasn't seen or dealt with in some capacity. And so I said to him, I said, "Hey, Milton, you better call your Amazon animal friends because we want to see some cool stuff tomorrow. So, you know, invite them to the party." Well, about 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, this one guy, he goes, "So I don't think Milton's going to need to call anyone to the party here because one of them is already here." And we looked up, and up on the ceiling, wrapped around this beam that went across the veranda, was a boa constrictor, a tree boa, which I just have problems with. Like, I can kind of sort of handle a boa on the ground, but tree boas, ones that hang up in the trees or around beams so they can strike at their prey, like, that feels unfair. That feels like they're above you, you're not looking up, they have an advantage. The whole thing, just the thought of them slithering up trunks of trees, the whole thing, it's just beyond me. So Milton had to get a plastic chair, put it on a plastic table, and stand on top of that, which just that, I was out. Like, just that, just standing on the table on the chair, forget the boa. I didn't want to have to try to balance myself on a veranda like that. But he gets up there, And then it took him a couple minutes to slowly untangle this boa from the beam. And, you know, I have to tell you, I asked him, I said, you know, Milton, I have a serious question here. What keeps that boa from coming into my room, which is about 20 feet away? Yes, we're inside, but not hard for them to get under the cracks of the doors. And he said, you know, nothing. Which did not sit great with me, except for the fact that he said, look, all the food is out here, the bats, the mice, the lizards, so that they want to be out here. And my friend Scott was like, any chance they're interested in Pop-Tarts? Because he had a box of Pop-Tarts in his room. And so we were all like unloading our snacks and we were like folding up our clothes and putting it in front of the cracks of the door. I mean, we were just pathetic. All that said is, that was my story of the boa. I wish I could tell you that it was the only sighting, but the very next night I went out there, did a sweep of the beams, saw nothing, sat down, turned off the lights, was enjoying the stars when I looked up about 5 minutes later and saw what looked just like the boa from the night before, although it was not the same one. It was actually bigger. And so anyway, yeah, I think our Jungle Pastors Conference now has a PR problem just slightly, but it was incredible. It was worth it. And I want to tell you a little bit about some of these incredible people because they are giving their lives. They really remind me of the first century Christ followers who, like when Jesus said, birds of the air have nests and foxes have dens, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. That is what so many of these men and women live on a regular basis. They stay in one spot for a little while, and then the Lord calls them to a different field or a village that's deeper into the jungle. They are very itinerant. Most of them have just enough clothing to get by. Many of them, food comes at a daily basis. On a daily basis, they're not storing food. They're gardening. They're fishing. They're getting to a local, you know, shop of some sort, store of some sort where they can get grains. But they live very, very minimal lifestyles. And they trust the Lord and they have incredible joy and incredible faith. And it is very contagious, we'll say. So here's what I want to do today. I want to start in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and I want to read verses 9 through 12. And at first, you might be like, okay, what does this have to do with what we're talking about? But we're going to get there. Okay, so this is what Paul says. He says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 9, he says, "For it is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it treads out grain. Is God really concerned about oxen? Isn't he really saying it for our sake? Yes, this is written for our sake, because he who plows ought to plow in hope, and he who threshes should thresh in hope of sharing the crop. If we have sown spiritual things for you, is it too much if we reap material benefits from you? If others have this right to receive benefits from you, don't we even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right. Instead, we endure everything so that we will not hinder the gospel of Christ." Okay, so Paul is talking here about support for himself, but also for other ministers of the gospel. He's essentially saying that if they are out blessing others spiritually, shouldn't they also reap materially? And so here he gives this example from the Old Testament, and he says in the Old Testament, it says, don't muzzle the ox when he is treading out the grain. In other words, you don't want to put a muzzle over the ox while he's treading out the grain, because then he can't enjoy the grain. He can't eat the grain that he is treading. And so in the Old Testament, the whole idea was that you wanted to be able to bless the oxen as he was treading out this grain and by allowing him to share in what he was working for. Paul here in the New Testament says, essentially, if God cares about the ox, the animals, how much more does he care for human beings? How much more does he care for ministers of the gospel? And so he says, look, if you're reaping spiritually from people who are ministers of the gospel, then you should be taking care of them financially. You should be giving generously to them. And the reason I bring this up at the top is once I got back from the jungle, the very next day, I just happened to be in 1 Corinthians 9. I was just making my way through that letter. And I thought about those jungle pastors because I was thinking about the reality that virtually none of them have any financial support. They are all just so deep in the jungle and working in such obscurity. And there's just not the funds, there's not the resources. And I'm so thankful that Justice and Mercy International, that we're in a place where we can support them, where we can help with material needs, with food, with clothing, with medical. I'm so thankful for that. But as we apply this on a larger scale, you know, we're going to be looking today at running the race and running the race in order to receive the prize that the Lord has for each of us. And one of the ways that we run our race well is by giving generously to the ministry of the gospel. So if you are part of a local church, I want to encourage you to tithe, to give financially, to give of your time to your local church because you're receiving a spiritual benefit there. You should be giving back financially. Think about the nonprofits that maybe are near and dear to your heart. And you, there are people that are working for those nonprofits and they're giving and it's a blessing to you. What a blessing for you to be able to give back financially. So this is really big for us. And it was a reminder for me that there should not be this disparity. You know, we should not have an overabundance while other people are serving the Lord with barely anything. And so this is number one today. If we are reaping spiritually, we should be giving generously. If we're reaping spiritually, we should be giving generously. And this is a part of our running our race well. You may have noticed at the end of verse 12 that Paul says, look, even though we have a right to this kind of support, we're not making use of it because we don't want to hinder the gospel. So we're not going to force this. We're going to keep doing what we're doing because the gospel is the most important thing. And we won't read the following verses, but verses 13 through 23 talk about relinquishing our rights for the sake of others, putting down what is rightfully ours in order for the good news of the gospel, basically not being selfish with our things or our resources, but putting others and their needs ahead of ourselves. And we're going to pick up in verse 24 of chapter 9. And here's what Paul says. He says, don't you know that the runners in a stadium all race, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way to win the prize. Now, everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything. They do it to receive a perishable crown, but we an imperishable crown. So I do not run like one who runs aimlessly or box like one beating the air. Instead, I discipline my body and bring it under strict control so that after preaching to others, I myself will not be disqualified. So here we're talking about this prize and living for an incorruptible crown versus a temporal and a fleeting one. And this is where being around the jungle pastors and their wives and the single missionaries that are there bless me so much because they are so clear about what they're living for. They are not saddled or weighed down with all of the temporal attachments that we have here, all of the shimmering pleasures and entertainment. They don't have it. And so they're not weighed down by it. And as a result, they have a very clear picture of what they're living for. And their passion and their desire is to help meet the physical needs of those around them and mostly the spiritual needs. But it's beautiful because they do both. They want to bring the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ for salvation, for forgiveness of sins, while also ministering to their whole selves and to their physical needs, to maybe their material needs. And so they're very clear about what their goal is. And they're also very clear that the prize that is coming is eternal. It is not going to deteriorate. What is Paul talking about here when he talks about running this race? He brings up something that would have been very familiar to the Corinthian people because they had these yearly games, second only to the Olympics, and the winner of the race would receive a crown, a literal crown, but it was a pine wreath. And we know a pine wreath is not going to last. And so Paul says, you know, they are receiving a corruptible, temporal, disintegrating crown, but we are running our spiritual race. We are living our lives for the Lord, for something that can never be taken away, something that is eternal. And then he says, notice that a lot of people run, but only one receives the prize. Now, that's always been perplexing to me because I'm like, well, we know that there's not one prize for all the Christians throughout the ages. We know that that's not the case. What I believe Paul is saying here is not that there is only one winner in the body of Christ. His point is that we're to prepare in such a way as if there is only one prize. So think about that. When you're little and you're on a soccer team or a basketball team, at least it feels like this is how it is today, at the end of the year, everybody gets a trophy. Like, you get a trophy just for being on the team. You don't really have to do much. You don't have to be the best. You don't have to work the hardest. Just, you're on the team, you get a trophy. But as we get older, we know that that is not how life works. Only one person receives the prize. And that is what motivates people to work so hard. You know, you think about Tom Brady and his retirement and how he worked so hard. He cut out all kinds of foods and he was incredibly disciplined and he studied hard. Why? Because there's only one Lombardi trophy at the end of the year. There's only one prize. And so he trained in light of that. And so Paul is saying we are to take our lives here on earth so seriously. So he says, everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything. And we discipline ourselves. So just like athletes prepare hard, we want to discipline ourselves spiritually. And here's the thing. There is a lot of joy in this. In fact, I want to read this quote by Mark Taylor, and this is out of the New American Commentary. And it's talking about this, how do we achieve this eternal goal? And he says, in context, the overall argument has to do with putting others before self in order to maximize one's effectiveness for the gospel, which requires rigorous self-discipline. Okay, so the overall argument has to do with putting others before self in order to maximize one's effectiveness for the gospel, which requires rigorous self-discipline. And I'll include that quote in the show notes. My point here is that there is great joy when we are others-centered. You know this, we live in a very broken world. There might be tree boas in the Amazon, but there is depression here, there is anxiety here, there are high rates of suicide, there are shootings, there are fractious relationships, there is pain all around us. And Paul here is saying, listen, this is the time for us to give generously. This is the time for us to lay down what might even be rightfully ours so that we can serve others, so that we can be a blessing to others. You know, we talk about this eternal crown, and there are three things that are eternal, that Scripture says are eternal: God, God's word, and people. Those are the three things that are eternal. So when we think, practically speaking, We want to be thriving relationship with the Lord, where we're in the Word, where we're in prayer with Him, where we're communing with Him. We want to be part of our local church because we want to be around other believers. We want to be out on mission, serving in our communities, maybe serving in some places overseas. We want to be giving, not just financially, but also sharing of our resources, maybe sharing the space in our homes. And so we want to have these disciplines in our lives, not so we can mope around and be depressed and discouraged and woe is me, we're working so hard. No, so that we can experience what Christ has for us. And so this is number two. We will only live spiritually disciplined lives if our prize is in focus. We'll only live spiritually disciplined lives if our prize is in focus. And I think this is where I get tripped up. I think people I know get tripped up, is that the prize isn't clear to us. And Paul doesn't specifically lay out, by the way, what this prize is, but we can get a pretty clear picture that it is whatever eternal reward we are going to have in Jesus Christ as a result of the way that we live our lives here. And I will firsthand testify that it is not just joy for later, it is joy for right now. That some of, I think, the weightiness of our lives right now is because we are so weighed down by all the stuff we have, and we have turned inward on ourselves, and we are focusing on ourselves, and that always is going to result in anger, depression, bitterness, misery. It just, we know that. We've got to be focused outwards, and these men and women in the jungle, they're just so other-focused, and you see the lightness, you see the joy, that the prize that they are living for is in focus, and that is what makes their lives and the discipline in their lives worth it. So I would encourage you to be in the Word. Ask the Lord to show you what those eternal promises are, and to take steps of obedience in following Him and begin to taste of those blessings. Okay, so I want to move into the last part of the podcast today, and I want to tell you about a personal story of a couple there named Darcy and Giaval. And they are from the south of Brazil. They actually were many years ago, they're now, I think, right at 70, but many years ago, they felt the call to, as Paul talked about, relinquish their rights in the south of Brazil. They were from a comfortable city, and go all the way north to the jungle and minister to the Ribeirinhos, which is the river people. And I had written about Darcy in the devotional that I just released called The Blessed Life, a 90-day devotional through the teachings and miracles of Jesus. I had written about her because I've learned so much about I think what Jesus has to say about the blessed life from the people in Brazil. And so I want to read a little bit of their story. But 42 years ago, they came to the jungle. They actually got lost getting to the place that they were headed to. They were lost for about 10 days. There were jaguars, there were snakes, they were hungry, they were thirsty, they almost turned around. And yet God sustained them. And here, 42 years later, they have this ministry in the jungle. So this is day 69 of The Blessed Life. And it is based on Matthew 8, 23 through 24, where the disciples get into the boat with Jesus. But it attaches to what we're talking about today. So this is how it starts. I once heard a friend teach on this passage. After reading these verses, she distinguished between the would-be disciples and Jesus' true followers, and what a word it was. She explained that the ones who have fully said yes to Jesus are the ones in the boat with him. The overly zealous scribe and the procrastinating would-be disciple had not fully said yes, for they were not in the boat. Followers such as Peter, Andrew, James, and John, his true disciples, were in there, and contrary to all my Christian sensibilities, being in the boat with Jesus did not ensure smooth sailing. They literally followed him into a storm. One afternoon, overlooking the Amazon River, I sat with my Brazilian missionary friend, Darcy. A woman in her mid-60s at the time, she'd grown up in a sophisticated city in southern Brazil, a world away from the vast jungles of the rainforest. We sat on a meager wooden bench, peering out over the river, surrounded by humidity that laughs in the face of hair product. Darcy told me that more than 40 years prior, she and her husband, Gioval, followed God's call to live as missionaries in the Amazon. She didn't want to do it. With the straightest expression you've ever seen, she explained how much she hated water, boats, snakes, mosquitoes, and heat. I so wished for her sake we'd been overlooking the French Riviera. For a time, it seemed that Darcy had followed Jesus to the wrong place, that she had gotten in the wrong boat. After years of service in a large Amazonian city, Jesus prompted Darcy and Gioval to go even deeper into the jungle, to get to those most everyone else had forgotten about. Darcy initially resisted. Depression settled into her soul until obedience finally gave way to a newfound joy. After several days on the river, they arrived at their destination, a humble village brimming with largely forgotten, beautiful people. Disembarking riverboats in the Amazon usually means a tenuous walk down a bouncy wooden plank that serves as a crude overpass between boat and land. I have walked them many times and never once elegantly. Darcy recalled the narrow plank that stood between her and the countless children, the tired moms and somber dads who desperately needed hope. She was afraid, plucked from her normal environment and feeling ill-equipped. For Darcy, following Jesus literally meant walking the plank. She followed him afraid, tenuously across the bouncing wooden slat. When her foot touched land, she recalled a flood of peace and joy washing over her. The glee on the children's faces, the hope in the eyes of parents needing tangible help and soul renewal attested to why Jesus had called her there. Her depression lifted. I had seen it for myself. Darcy's countenance testified of her transformation. To be in the boat with Jesus is to have said yes to following him. Each of our boats and planks will be different, but they're part of what it means to follow him, a big theme of Matthew in this section. When we consider the overeager and undereager disciples on the shore with the disciples in the boat, we see that true discipleship isn't merited by personality or vocation, only by our response to Jesus. Has someone or something kept you from saying yes to him? This is the question we must ask ourselves. And if you find yourself in the middle of a storm as a result of following him, don't wish to be with the fair-weather disciples back on land. It's infinitely better to be in a storm with Jesus than in calm circumstances without him. As he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. May we follow him too. That is a bit of Gioval and Darcy's story, and I had this incredible privilege of being able to bring this book down to the Amazon with me. And one morning, with the help of my friend Francie, who is a translator, I read this line for line while Francie translated, and I read it to Darcy and Gioval. And at the end of me reading that story and them just recounting their long journey, Gioval looked at us, and with tears in his eyes, he said, "Following Jesus was worth it then. It's worth it now. It's worth it all." And I decided that in honor of Pastor Gioval, I needed to make that our number three for today. Following Jesus was worth it then. It's worth it now. It's worth it all. And that is what I want to take from the jungle to you today. It's what I have taken from the jungle for me today, that I want to live for the incorruptible prize. I want to live for the joy of knowing Jesus and being his disciple and his minister in our world, because it's worth it. It is worth it. So how do we cultivate this in our lives? We always like to ask that question at the end of the Cultivate podcast. How do you and I cultivate this in our lives? And this is one question. Are you giving financially to your local church? Are you giving financially to those in need, to local ministries? Listen, if you've already given to your local church and you want to give additionally, You can go to justiceandmercy.org and you'll see all the work that we do with these jungle pastors in the Amazon. And I can tell you, I work with them on a daily basis, and that support goes to help in incredible ways. So are you, if you're receiving spiritually, are you giving generously back? Are you living for what will last forever, or are you living for what is temporal? And that's a question that I deal with every day, because it is so easy to live for the temporal things in this life. But think about it and ask yourself this question. What are the things that you have worked so hard for that are temporal? And have you found joy in them? Have they given you lasting peace? Have those things been able to solve the deepest problems of your heart? And I can answer that rhetorical question, say that only Jesus can do that for us. And so we want to live for what lasts forever. And are you willing to relinquish your rights for the sake of the gospel? Are you willing to lay some things down for others? This is where the joy will come. So thank you so much for letting me talk about this trip to the jungle, to share some of the stories. I will tell you, not even a tree boa can keep me away from these incredible people, because they have taught me so much about Jesus. They've taught me so much about joy. They've taught me so much about living for what lasts. And I wanted to share that with you. So I pray today that whatever it is that you're going through, if you are wrestling with a decision for obedience, if you're wrestling over something that you know you need to lay aside in order for you to be more disciplined in the things of the Lord, if you're wrestling with wanting to hold your resources back instead of generously share, boy, I want to encourage you, follow Jesus, get in that boat with him, because that is where the joy is. So I just want to encourage you to follow him, because he is worth it. So if you have enjoyed this episode of the Cultivate Podcast, I would love for you to share it. Would love for you to write reviews. Those reviews help people know and find out about the Cultivate Podcast. Also, you know that it is part of a wider family of podcasts with Access More. So you can go to accessmore.com and find some of that out. Also, for the full show notes and quotes, you can go to kellymentor.com/podcast and you can find out information from today's episode. I look so forward to seeing you back here on the next episode of the Cultivate Podcast.